Miller Lite, the official beer partner of your Philadelphia Phillies, is proud to serve as presenting sponsor of WIP's High Hopes Pod. So whether you're listening to the game, catching up on the latest High Hopes Pod, or at the ballpark, remember, it tastes like Miller time, Phillies fans. Celebrate responsibly.
The wait is over. Football is here, and so is DraftKings. DraftKings is now live in all 50 states. One app, every sport, nationwide. New DraftKings customers, sign up with code 2400, spend $5 to get $200 in rewards within 21 days. Includes all markets. That's code 2400 in partnership with DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 1-800-MY-RESET. Connecticut, call 888-789-777. Or visit ccpg.org on behalf of Boot Hill Casino in Kansas. Bet tax pass-through may apply in Illinois. 21 and over. Void in Canada. Bet with DraftKings Sportsbook to get bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Or trade with DraftKings Predictions to get predictions dollars that expire in 1 year. Event contract trading involves risk of loss. Predictions offer void in New York. Non-withdrawable rewards issued as $50 click-to-claims every 7 days for 21 days. Terms at dkng.co/offer. Limited time offer. Nationwide based on sportsbook predictions and free-to-play sports contest availability. Varies by state.
This is the High Hopes Podcast. High Hopes. On the Odyssey app and Sports Radio 94 WIP. The crowd was singing high hopes, smiling through a broken nose. Oh, high hopes, high hopes.
I feel a little less alone.
Yo. Edition of the Habs Podcast, sponsored by Miller Lite, official partner of the Philadelphia Phillies. Tastes like Miller time, Philadelphia. Celebrate responsibly. No Fritzy tonight. The West Coast was too much for him, I think, Tucker. You know, it's just he needed a break. You know, Jack, sometimes he just needs a break from the Phillies, right? I mean, you know.
Yeah, I mean, of the people on this podcast, the one that talks about their sleep schedule the most is Jack Fritz. I think most people are aware of that. Is he needs his beauty sleep?
We know how many other things he loves in life, like so many other things that matter to him besides the Phillies. So he could probably just focus on some of those other things. I mean, we know how much he loves the Eagles and the Sixers and the Flyers and all these other things going on. Like, you know, sometimes the Phillies just have to take a back burner, you know?
Yeah, like of all the people that I work with, he's the one that I wouldn't say will text me at 5 a.m. his random Phillies thoughts. That's not Jack Fritz. Like,
dude, what? I'm happy you said that because there is no one in the history of my life who has texted me about the Phillies during other major sporting events more. Like, Eagles are in the Super Bowl. Phillies text from Jack, you know, like the greatest game seven of all time. Phillies text from Jack, you know, like whatever big thing is happening, Jack is texting us about the Phillies. So, you know, it was not his choice not be here today in real.
No. So he had some extenuating circumstances, but I'm sure he'll
fine.
Be.
Everything's good.
I'm sure he's
he'll
fine. Be back. Yes.
Yeah. Everything's fine.
And I'm sure he's excited with all he's got going on right now.
Yes. A lot going on in the Fritz house. All right. Let's dive into it. Cause look, I don't think he picked a particularly I actually think Jack, if this were a quote unquote, like bigger pod, you know, if there were more going on in this series out in Seattle, he would have like fought tooth and nail to get here somehow. But he's like, you know what? It's okay. Not much happened out there. What do you make of let's dive into the series in Seattle. Look, not a ton. There's really no news since then. I think there's one big thing that happened in Seattle that clearly, I think, is the main headline of the pod, main headline of what's going on with the Phillies right now. And that's the Wheeler thing. We'll get to Lizardo, and thank God for Jesus Lizardo. And obviously, I thought a nice win yesterday, a team that was like, all right, we just came off this 9-game streak, you know, had the biggest win of this season. I thought they would lose the first game. I didn't know that they would lose both the first two, but I'm not shocked by it. I thought yesterday felt like stop bleeping around. We're on the West Coast. We're on the right time now. Let's play some baseball. And it felt good. So I feel solid going into this Angel series. I don't have any real issues with the series. I expected them to falter at some point. The real concern is Wheeler, who has not looked good really since that, you know, the All-Star break when he, you know, made that like FU push after not getting, you know, the initial bid and all that. And not only has he not looked great for six or seven starts, which is very un-Wheeler-like, but, you know, 8 runs in 4 innings or whatever. I don't even got through 4 the other night. Where are you at on Wheeler? What do you make of? I think it was interesting because after the game, JT comes out and, you know, talks a little bit more openly than you would expect. Mattingly talk about not tipping pitches, they're worried about tips, this and that. Is it tipping this and that? Is it a dead arm period? Do they need to fan him out? There's so many little, like, what's going on here? Where are you at with Wheeler?
Yeah, it's weird because it's mostly a location thing, I think, right? Like his fastball is still has the same velocity, right? And it might be kind of a dead arm thing. He doesn't feel like himself. I mean, he hasn't thrown more than five innings in a start since I think over a month, July 27th. His first start after the All-Star break, he was actually okay since then. I mean, he had the start that was kind of cut short by the rain delay. He was only able to go two innings, but he's got 24 innings pitched in his last six starts. He's allowed 31 hits. He's allowed 16 walks, which is, you know, a really high number for him. And he just hasn't been able to locate his pitches. And he said that as much, you know, after the game the other night, that he's really having an issue locating anything besides his fastball. And even his fastball, I think the location has been kind of spotty. And I do wonder if it is just kind of a real struggle for him to get on the mound every fifth day. I mean, you think about where he was a year ago, where he was dealing with a career threatening injury, right? Like not just a season ending injury, but an injury that a lot of pitchers have never come back from. And the fact that he did come back as quickly as he did before May 1st, and he did pitch as well as he did in the first half of the season, where he looked like a Cy Young candidate if he had enough innings to go. And now you kind of look at him now, it's a wonder he kind of made it to this point anyway. And we've seen this before with him, right? Like in 2022, I think he took 2 weeks off in September before coming back for the final push of the season and making it, you know, to the postseason. So it is worrisome because of what he's dealt with to get here, but it's also not really anything that new for Zach Wheeler. I mean, the guy's 36 years old. He's talked about the end of his career pretty consistently now at this point. And given all he's dealt with in the last 12 months, the fact that you're saying, hey, man, like he might be running out of gas in August, I don't think it's that crazy to see.
Yeah, and it's one of those unique situations where you don't know if he is running out of gas or not because of past seasons where, again, I mean, we all remember 2022, they phantom IL'd him. We've seen this type of thing from Wheeler before where he's, you know, kind of run into an August or early September kind of lull, and then, you know, whether it's a phantom IL stint or not, reestablishes, and by the playoffs, you know, he's lights out Wheeler again. I think you hit on the thing that I have to assume, certainly for me, and I think for most Phillies fans, is that the big concern is that this year is not like all the others. This is a year where he didn't have his normal offseason. He didn't have his full ramp up period. He didn't have all these, you know, normal check marks that he hits off before he starts the season. He did start the season late. And again, he is coming off something where we didn't know if he'd ever pitch again, much less come back and look as good as he has. So I'm with you. I'm pretty concerned about Zach Wheeler because of the unknown. Like, would it shock me if in, you know, a couple more starts, whatever, or they give him some time off, but whatever happens in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, Zach Wheeler figures it out and he looks like himself again? Not at all. I think it's totally on the table. But I just don't think we can ignore the fact that, like, there is this extra element to this that wasn't a part of it before that makes it much more of an unknown now.
Yeah, I mean, if I had to say, you know, my concern level is probably a 7 out of 10, 6 out of 10, somewhere kind of in
yeah,
that range.
I would be,
up, I'm not sounding the alarm bells yet. But, I mean, this is a guy, and you kind of think about what this team is built to do in the postseason. It's throw Sanchez, Wheeler, Lizardo out there and pray that they do enough to where the offense can come around and hit enough to win. And if he's not a part of that equation, if he's only able to go five or six max and allow three runs, like that's a big issue for a team that has questions in the bullpen.
Yeah, no doubt. I think the way this team's constructed, and look, any team can get hot, any team can go on a run. That's the way baseball is. If this team hits and, you know, two guys are great, they can win. But to your point, I think it's going to be really hard for this group to win the World Series without those three guys being really good for the majority of times they take the hill. It's just the heart of what this team is, both, you know, both just logically looking at the numbers, but also in terms of how this team is put together. And in terms of, like, taking the field and Wheeler gets bombed in a game, like, I don't know. I'm not going to have a ton of team that, and you hope they're hitting and maybe they can hit to get back in the game. But then we're also talking about a bullpen that is the part of the team I trust the least heading into the playoffs. So it just raises it highlights things that were already a question, makes things more important than they were prior. And, you know, I am very concerned about Wheeler while also completely leaving open the possibility that this is nothing in 2 weeks. I really do think that's possible. But again, to your point, I am definitely I'm over 50% in terms of concern. You know what I mean? It's not like, oh, 50-50 for me. Like, I've crossed the 50% threshold, but not by that much. You know what I mean? I think I'm closer to 55 or 60 in terms of nervousness, where I did appreciate what Wheeler said after the game. It feels like he's saying he feels okay, you know, and, you know, we don't always know that what we hear from players is the truth, obviously, but I was encouraged by what he said. The team seems to be going a far way to say, hey, he's not hurt. Like, this is a command thing. Like, this is okay. This mitigating factor makes it something that's incredibly nerve-wracking. All right, let's move on to the other two starters, because outside of Wheeler, I mean, really, you know, we'll get to the bullpen, but starter-wise, I mean, obviously Lizardo is their best pitcher right now. Nola, though, I mean, another really, I mean, they don't hit for, it's really strange. It feels like all of a sudden they've decided they don't want to hit for Aaron Nola anymore. It feels like every
last couple starts.
Right? It feels like guy goes out there and just doesn't get any support. But what do you make of Aaron Nola right now as a potential four-star in the playoffs, as someone, do you think they, as particularly with what's going on with Wheeler and Sanchez right now, and particularly Wheeler in terms of the struggles he's going through, can Aaron Nola for a few weeks help lift them up and stuff too? Where are you at with Nola? How real is the last, you know, couple months of him?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been really encouraging, because you see what he really struggled at the beginning of the season, struggled both finding the zone. And I really think for him, especially, the ABS kind of messed with him. I remember looking back in, I think it was in May, when he was really, really going through it.
The pitch clock, remember?
Yeah, and that's why it makes me think, like, it's not crazy to say.
You might just be a routine guy. Like,
if you go on Baseball Savant, there's a percentage of your pitches that are on the edge of the zone, right? And usually in Aaron Nola's career, he was between like 45-50%, right? And that was his thing, was, you know, he didn't have the best fastball, but he was going to live on the edge of the zone, and he'd probably pick up a few advantageous calls from umpires because of his reputation. But he was a guy who missed bats by kind of living on the black. And early on this season, he was at like 30% of his pitches on the edge of the zone.
So
like,
he was afraid
really
to throw
missing
it there is the point. Yeah.
Either, you know, way or off the plate, or afraid, he was just coming, you know, right down the middle. So the fact that he's been able to upgrade that, like last I checked, it's kind of back to his normal career average. Like, he's back up to 43% on the season now. So that's certainly impressive. And you just watch the confidence he has now. Like, he's still giving up a home run or two every game. He's actually given a home run in every start since July 5th, which is pretty impressive. That's 8 in a row, 9 in a row,
hard to do.
Like that. Like that's impressive in and of itself. Like,
well,
that's
what's impressive
Jamie Moyer
is a few of those were just the only run of the game that he gave up, you know?
Yeah, like one home run, two runs allowed. One home run, it was a solo shot. One home run, solo shot. One home run, two runs allowed. Two home runs, three runs allowed. Like, he's been fine mitigating the damage because he's just giving up solo home runs. Like, it's still kind of crazy that the mistakes he makes are getting planted in the seats. Like, he doesn't make a mistake and a guy hits a fly out to the warning track. If he makes
a
mistake, it's going 450 feet.
Yeah, it's wild.
So, man. I mean, that's still a little worrisome. But, I mean, in the way I'm confident in Wheeler kind of finding himself, because he's a veteran and he's done it before and we've seen him kind of battle through adversity in his career, that's why I feel a little encouraged with Aaron Nola. Because, like, we've seen growing pains with him in his decade here in the Phillies rotation. Like, it hasn't always been perfect. Like, he's had great seasons. He's finished top five in Cy Young voting 3 times, but it's kind of been a lot of up and down. Like, he's had blow up moments, and he's had a lot of them this year. But yeah, what you've seen the last month, the last 5 weeks, whatever it is, you have to be encouraged by it. Like you really do. The only thing that you said is worrisome is they scored one run for him and four. I guess they won his start before the game. He threw 7 innings. They went 4-1. But yeah, I mean, just what you've seen, he looks like the guy that you gave this huge contract to last year, 2 years ago, whatever it was. I mean, you know, Jack joked for most of the first half of the season, 4 more years. Now it kind of looks like, okay, like, if this is the guy.
This is the guy.
It's not that terrible.
It's fine. It's not
I don't
great,
know if it
fine.
Is.
But he's going to age.
Very encouraging sign. But
I totally agree with you. And to your point, it's both important for now and important for the future, because if he can, it felt like Aaron Nola had a chance to be a 5 ERA fifth starter for $100 million for the last, 4 years, $100+ million the last 4 years of the contract, and it doesn't feel like that is a lock anymore. All right. Last thing on the pitching, then we'll get to the bullpen and the bats before we get out of here. But I will bring in our missing pal, the third member of our trio here for a moment, because I will read a tweet to you from the one, the only Jack Fritz, and I will see if you agree or disagree. Take it all into account. And remember that it is August 27th. There are 28 games left in the season. We are still a ways away. Jack Fritz tweeted at 6:10 p.m. yesterday, Lizardo should be the game one starter. Agree or disagree?
It's hard to argue after watching yesterday, right?
I thought it was funny.
I saw people arguing, should Wheeler or Nola be the game two starter? I think Lizardo being the game one starter is a lot more compelling to me than who's going to be game two or really, really game three. Now, Lizardo also, and the thing that would make me kind of weary is he's really good at home. His numbers on the road haven't been
so Sanchez, good. Though. I mean, Sanchez is
the same way.
Yeah.
And, it's hard to argue after yesterday when he allowed one hit over seven innings in Seattle. But, I mean, you have two guys at the top of your rotation right now, two lefties. I mean, I think right now he should be the game one starter. Like, he's your best pitcher. He has the most swing and miss stuff. As good as Sanchez has been, and he's been fine the last few weeks, he hasn't been as lights out as he was, obviously, since that scoreless streak. But he isn't missing as many bats as Lizardo has. And what Lizardo's been able to do in the last really 3 months since he got off to that rough start, I mean, his ERA is under 3.3 after that month of April he had. I mean, what he's been able to do and the way he's been able to establish himself with the swing and miss stuff he has, it's hard to not think that he shouldn't be the game one starter.
Yeah, look, I think the key is that we're a month away from it, over a month away from it, and I just don't think we could say today. Like, if Zach Wheeler reestablishes himself, I'm giving the ball to Wheeler over everyone in game one, and I don't know that they'll do that, but Zach Wheeler, if he looks like Zach Wheeler for a few starts before the playoffs, has proven to be an all-time great playoff pitcher. Like, not that is not hyperbole. We know, like, one of the greats in the playoffs in the time he's been given. So I would just trust Wheeler the most. If he can reestablish himself, a couple good starts for the playoffs, I'm good. I just trust him when the lights are brightest. I do think you make a really interesting point. As of right now, they would be on the road for that first round series. They're two games back of the Cubs. I don't know. I guess they'll probably lose the tiebreaker there, I would think, right? Because I know they got swept in Chicago. So I'm assuming.
Yeah, they must.
So really like three games back there and 4.5 behind the Braves right now. So it's unlikely they're going to get, 28 games left, but they're on the outside looking in for a home playoff series. You hope they can get there, but if they can, you don't really worry about it for the three-gamer because it's all on the road. I think you pitch your best guys. They're all pitching there.
Yeah, you don't have a choice.
So I don't even think this is really going to be a huge question in terms of the home road thing. It'll just be a question in terms of, like, do you want to lose a series and not let Lizardo pitch if you get swept in two and he doesn't pitch? Like, those kinds of things come into play here. But I generally am with you. I want them to be willing to do something like this. I'm concerned that they might just say, we're going to trust the guys who have done it before. I mean, that's a Phillies thing, man. So if I had to bet right now today, I would bet Sanchez is the game one starter. But
I would think so.
Which is funny because he was the one we didn't even mention there, but I think he'll probably.
No, but I think based on his reputation, I think he probably just gets that nod and deservedly so. Like
he has not been bad
over the last 2 years. He's been their best pitcher, right? Like since opening day of last year,
three to four best pitchers in the sport. The last couple, five best pitchers in the sport, like him.
And I think there's an argument to be made. He's the game three starter for this rotation.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think, you're right. Especially if Wheeler's healthy, I think, Yeah. And again, that's the thing. There's a guy who had 50 and two-thirds scoreless innings to consecutive this year, I do think, and we've talked about his numbers since then, it's started to become a thing more, but I said it in the moment. Like, I loved it. It was one of the cooler regular season things we've had in a long time in Philly. But, I thought it was going to wear on him. Like, I always think those type of things, like, it's so hard to just kind of keep rolling after something like that. You put so much into it, and it does feel like that's affected him somewhat, at least numbers-wise.
Yeah, I mean, I just think the intensity of something like that can can drain you. And, you know, you hear other athletes say it, like even in other sports, like I've heard Draymond Green say, you know, trying to go for 73 wins that year in Golden State, as amazing as they were, he's like, that was exhausting. We were completely beat by the playoffs because we were chasing this record. And I feel like that's probably the way Sanchez is, right? Like you are so intense and you're so focused on the singular number. And then once it's finally done, not only are you exhausted, but you finally can probably exhale and relax a little bit. Maybe your competitive juices aren't flowing nearly as much as they were during the streak. And as a result, I don't think he's necessarily been as sharp. Like, he's still been great. He's had a couple blowups that start in Kansas City.
I mean,
City,
he's probably going to finish second in Cy Young, right? I mean, like, he's had a great year. Like,
both him and Lizardo, I think, are going to finish top five in Cy Young voting. Like, Mizorowski is probably going to win it, and he's probably going to be unanimous.
He's been
unbelievable.
Okay. We can say it. While everyone else has faltered, Mizorowski still has like a 1.68 ERA or whatever the hell it is. So, you know
that's crazy. I had to listen to the Mariners broadcast on the radio yesterday as I was driving home from Niagara Falls, and on XM they only have the home broadcast.
Yeah, I knew that. Yeah.
So they kept talking about how Lizardo, I think lefties are hitting 144 against Lizardo this year, which is unbelievable. Against Mizorowski this year are hitting 110.
Stop it.
Like that's like video game numbers.
Stop it.
Like that's insane that lefties are hitting 110 against them. Like 140 is unbelievable, but 110, I just like, don't even bother bringing up a bat. Just bring a newspaper and hang out for three pitches.
Like Bryce Harper did against the Mets in that playoff series that one time.
Or he did against Hobie Milner.
Yeah, or Hobie Milner. Yeah, exactly. All right.
He's nasty, brother.
He's nasty, brother. All right. I want to get to the bullpen and then the bats before we get out of here. But quickly before we do, did you know, Tucker, that 1 in 3 people regularly suffer from nausea? And you know my wife, Emily, she is one of those people, and it has been a real problem in our lives. I'm talking like we can't go anywhere without her being in immense pain. I mean, head between the legs, riding along, like she gets a greenish tint to her. And basically, Zoe and I will be sitting there having a conversation, listening to music, and Emily is like not even a part of the car ride anymore. It has been so upsetting to drive anywhere with her. We don't hang out anymore when we drive. We can't talk. Boats, trains, forget about it. Like a boat is never even considered as a possibility. All these things are just a real impediment on our lives. Until Relief Band came into our lives, Relief Band for us has been an absolute miracle. It has been a complete life-changing thing for us. Now when we drive around, Emily is talking to me, she's hanging out. I ask her like 15 times, right, how you feeling? I feel great. I feel fine. I feel nothing. It is unbelievable. Again, it has completely and totally changed our lives. Relief Band is 100% natural. That means no pills, no side effects, and it works in just minutes. Relief Band stops nausea from motion sickness, morning sickness, and from meds like GLP-1s, and it even works for nausea from hangovers. So put Relief Band on your wrist and turn nausea off. Go to reliefband.com and use promo code James. That's J-A-M-E-S for 20% off. Again, J-A-M-E-S for 20% off. Reliefband.com, promo code James.
Drink up, baby. Fantasy Football Happy Hour is here to get you wins and have some laughs. Matthew Berry here, and my podcast, Fantasy Football Happy Hour, has the sleepers, busts, and starts and advice you need to win your league. We're diving into the tape, we're crunching the numbers to bring you sleepers, busts, weekly start sit advice. Whether you're defending a title or desperately avoiding last place, I've got you covered every single weekday. The bar is open. It's Fantasy Football Happy Hour with Matthew Berry, wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Tuck, the bullpen, then we'll get to the bats, but like not too much from this game. I think the Nola game, really the one, you know, they bring Kirkring in that spot and stunk again. You know, look, Kirkring is one of the all-time, like, the numbers are solid. He gets a lot of outs in low leverage spots. You know, he works quick, but it just feels like, I honestly don't remember it. I don't know that they've ever had a pitcher whose numbers look what they look like, who I trust less in a big spot than Ryan Kirkring. Like, I have no trust in Ryan Kirkring.
No, and you can just see it on his face. On his too. Face. Like you can just tell when, you know, he just doesn't have it. And yeah, I mean, that game on Tuesday night, like I think it just confirmed more of kind of what we've thought about the bullpen and what we've worried about the bullpen, right? And you can argue about Don Mattingly's deployage of these guys and the way he's deployed guys like Kirk Ring or even Brooks Raley. Like, why isn't Bolin coming out there in that situation?
Oh, did you
in the
know
seventh?
That he's not allowed to pitch before the eighth inning?
Oh,
that, those,
okay.
Those are the rules, Tucker. Yeah, it actually says on the back. You just have to open, like, pull up his jersey in the back. And it says not to be used before eighth inning. So,
so there you go. Con, but, you know, I mean, like, that's also a worry I have, right?
Is we I talk agree about with you. I agree
what
with
this
you.
Bullpen
very rigid,
is. And
very rigid.
Kirkering's struggles and Alvarado's struggles from the left side. Brooks Raley's been okay, although I don't really trust him in a big spot because he's had a lot of issues with inherited runners and really holding leads since he got here. He's got two blown saves and obviously had that issue on Tuesday night, allowing that single that scored the two runs trying to clean up Kirkering's mess. But yeah, I mean, I just, this bullpen isn't a strength for the team the way it has been maybe 2 years ago. And I don't trust Don Mattingly's ability to use them in the correct situation, which is an issue that people had about Don Mattingly when he was the Dodgers manager, when he was the Marlins manager. I mean, the Marlins had a lot more issues than who was pitching the eighth inning when they were winning. But you just kind of look at his reputation and what he's done in his time leading major league ball clubs. And this has always been a tough spot for him. And through 4 months, I think we can all say hasn't really learned a whole lot. Like hasn't necessarily really fixed his weaknesses. So, yeah, I mean, as you kind of look at what this team could be in the postseason, and you talk about someone like Lizardo, who I thought was really good when he came in that relief appearance in game four against the Dodgers.
Yeah, it was great.
Last year. I mean, is that a situation where you started thinking about these guys at the top of your rotation? If Nola is who we think he can be, and you can trust him to get five quality innings out of him in a game three or four in the postseason, can you move one of these big arms to the bullpen and try and freshen it up? Because right now, like, you have Duran, you have Bolin, and that's really about it. Bolin isn't even a guy that has a lot of playoff experience, right? Like, I don't even know if he's ever pitched in the postseason.
I don't think as far as I know, I don't think
I mean,
any.
If he's from Kansas City, definitely not.
Yeah, I mean, Kansas City, I was the other AL Central. Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, you just
made
look
it
at
a few years ago, didn't they, the Royals? Like, there was as a wild card with Bobby Witt. Didn't they make it 1 year?
Yeah, so he doesn't have – he only had 35.
I didn't think he had it, but they did make it a couple years ago, right, the Royals?
Yeah, they did. 2024, I think. They lost the division series to the Yankees. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, you just look at the team, and I don't know if there's a lot of guys out there that you can count on getting big outs. And heading into 2022, you kind of felt that way too. Like, you had Dominguez and Alvarado.
And Eflin.
And Eflin kind of came out of nowhere, but he also almost blew a five-run lead to the Braves in game one. He wasn't great, but – I worry about this team's ability to put together three innings or four innings of quality bullpen pitching in a postseason situation. And if we look at the rotation and how Wheeler has pitched without being able to get super deep into games, Sanchez hasn't been able to get super deep into games. Like, you might be in a situation where you're going to have to be getting 9 or 12 outs from these guys. And I just don't know if you have the horses to do it or the manager who can deploy them correctly to where they're in the best situation.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. That was definitely the book on Mattingly coming in here. Like, as far as flaws go, was the bullpen management, the usage. I think we've seen that. And again, I to your point, it's like, you know, what is he working with? But even still, I've not loved the way he's deployed those guys. And I mean, even down to something little, like, why have we not seen an up down from Duran yet? Like, we're talking about what they're going to need in the playoffs. Like, you're not winning the World Series without Yoan Duran pitching more than one inning with the way this bullpen is. Like, I'm not saying every outing, but, like, you're going to have a spot where Yoan Duran is going to have to give you five outs or something. Like, it's just going to happen. Like, the way this team is constructed, like, you're going to need that. Like, figure it out. See if the guy could do it. See how he looks when he does it. I mean, like, I'm just surprised they have not. Am I crazy? Like, I feel like, to your point, like, the only way this works bullpen-wise and ironically, you know, I think we spent so much time talking about the offense heading into the postseason and the concerns about the bats going cold and them not passing the baton and all that. And I think that is all warranted and justified and could happen. But I think by far the bigger concern is the bullpen heading into the playoffs. Like, it is to your point, even with that 22 pen, it is easily the worst pen they've gone in the playoffs. At least in 22, you had two guys who were elite heading in the moment. Alvarado and Seranthi were elite. Like, they were pitching like elite relievers. Now, they ran out of gas at the end, but they look freaking awesome. And then Eflin was pretty good and could come in and feel confident closing a game for you and all that. Like, it's Duran. And like we said, maybe Bolin. to your point, I do think Painter is a bit of a wild card here, just in the way he looked in his last outing. I mean, that was the best outing of his career, and the stuff popped. Yeah. I mean, the velocity and stuff. It's like, this guy could get out in October. The guy we just saw there. I think Alex McFarland is an interesting guy, in that another guy who just has actual stuff. The ball flies out of his hand. You're like, whoa, you know, look at that. That's mm-hmm. fast. You can see it. But again, we're talking about Painter, a rookie, McFarland, a rookie, like these guys making a difference, and then maybe a starter in the pen, like on top of Painter already. So if they're going to get it done in the bullpen, it's going to be unconventional. And I think they have to start thinking that way and start planning that way. And again, start doing things like getting drawn and up down and stuff.
Yeah. And I think that was something that, you know, Rob Thompson didn't do too well, but you know, I think one of the things that has hindered Mattingly and really the Phillies after their slow start is, everything was about, okay, well, now we have to get back to the postseason. We have to win every game. We have to play kind of every game like it's a playoff game as we try and dig out of this huge hole we climbed. And they got out of it, right? Like, credit to them. They played really well for a couple months. They got out of it. They're playing well again. But I think as a result, they couldn't really have that long view down the line the way they could have last year when they got off to a hot start, or the year before when they got off to a hot start, where, you know, Rob Thompson could say, like, hey, I want to make sure this guy, like, he did it with Strom a couple times. Like, I want to make sure, you know, he can do an up down. He can get the last out of the seventh and come out and pitch an eighth inning, because that's something we're going to have to ask him to do. Now, it was something that he didn't ask David Robertson to do. And unfortunately, that came back to bite him in game one last year. But like, that was something that, you know, this team had obvious goals and obvious playoff and World Series aspirations, and could kind of look forward to that and climb towards that. And I do think one of the hindrances of this team being so terrible to start the season is their goal has been so focused on just making the postseason, you haven't been able to really do that. But you're right. Like, you're going to be asking Duran to maybe get four out, five out, maybe a six out save at some point if it comes to it. And you can win in the postseason with a bad bullpen, but usually you do it because you can outslug the other teams, right? Like, because you can go and you can be up, you know, 13-6 in the seventh inning, and you can figure out that, hey, you know, this guy might give up a couple runs, but we got enough to play with it. It's
like
okay.
That Rangers team from 2023, Adolis Garcia's World Series team. That's exactly how they won the World Series, that team.
Mm-hmm. It's just, we're going to outslug people, and, you know, we'll be up enough that it won't really matter that our bullpen isn't lights out. Unfortunately, this team doesn't necessarily have the offensive firepower anymore to where that's really a possibility.
Yeah. Again, look, it's a possibility. It's baseball. We know that, you know, they do have Harper and Schwarber and some guys who can really, really hit a rise. Like, so if everyone's hot at the right time, it's just, I think it's so unlikely is the point, that it's just really unlikely. All right. Quick on the bats before we get out of here, and shout out to the New Deck Tavern. I love the New Deck Tavern. Emily and I've been there many times to play Quizzo and whatnot. Today's show is sponsored by Miller Lite and the New Deck Tavern on Samson Street. Check out the New Deck Tavern. For every Phillies game, enjoy $4 Miller Lite pints and famous shepherd's pie Miller Lights for Phil's win. Celebrate responsibly. All right, not too much to take away, I think, offensively from this series. It really did feel, and again, never excusing it, but 9 straight, the Schwarber walk-off to end it, and, you know, the greatest regular season inning of the year and one of the best we've seen and all that type of stuff.
Monday was the most scheduled loss you've ever seen.
Ever. Ever, 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 ever. The Wheeler part was the only part of it that was concerning. But, like, the bats going cold for the first few games in Seattle, like, okay. I mean, George Kirby's really good. He looked awesome. Like, it happens. I'm okay with it. And I thought, I'm actually more encouraged by them, Schwarber and Harper, coming out yesterday. I mean, like, all right, we're winning this baseball game. Any takeaways for you from the offense? Anything, like, I feel like we're kind of in the same spot we were in when Jack and I talked on Sunday or whatever, but, or Monday.
Yeah, I mean, it's just they're fine. Like, I'm more interested to see what they do this weekend in Anaheim and see how they kind of finish out this road trip there, and then obviously in Arizona coming back next week. But yeah, I mean,
which, by the way, is massive, that Arizona series, massive.
Oh, that's the biggest. I mean, depending on where you end up against Atlanta, you know, the next time you play them. But this would be the biggest series on the schedule so far. Yeah, I mean, just they were. Okay, like Trey Turner kind of stinks again. No one really talking about how awful he's been this month. He had one month where he was good and happened to be the worst month for the Phillies in the last like decade.
Here's what I don't get. And again, I'm not saying that Alec Boehm and Bryson Stott and all these guys are going to continue with this approach, because we know this team and these guys way too well to think that come playoff time, all of a sudden everyone's going to pass the baton and then do what works. Like, I hope they do. And you hope there's positive reinforcement in there. And Alec Bohm keeps saying it, and a rise makes a difference. All that. Who knows? What I do know is that Trey Turner came here and did his thing. And last year he said, I'm buying into this approach. I'm going to pass the baton. And even if it was a lame one, he won the freaking batting title. And then this year just goes back to this. Voting. Like, that's what I mean. Like, I can't logically get it. Like, maybe his bat's just slow now. Maybe he just can't catch up. Maybe that was his last gasp. I don't know. I just don't understand when you have an approach that works for you and works for the team in a way that it did last year, and then you come back this year and just refuse to do it. He is in the running for least likable player in Philadelphia. Like, I dislike rooting for Trey Turner. Like, he is not a fun guy to have in your baseball team. He's not.
Yeah, as I famously said in an Emmy award winning documentary, I just want Trey Turner to go away.
Yeah, you did. And look at you.
I do feel that way sometimes. And yeah. Like, listen, like, everyone on the team always has positive things to say about Trey Turner. He like Bryce Harper hard, can never hard, say enough cares, things. And they talk about how he's the hardest working guy and like all that stuff. And I clearly respect it, but it's just brutal to watch.
Yeah.
Like he really is. Like his approach at the plate is terrible. I was shocked to learn that he has 17 home runs this year.
Wow. Does he really?
Isn't that amazing?
I guess like 12 or 13 or something.
I heard that on the broadcast yesterday. They're like, yeah, he's having a bad year, but he's got 17 home runs. And I almost like drove the car off the side of the road. Cause I couldn't believe that he had 17 home runs this year. But yeah, I mean, his defense has started to go backwards again. He had another big error in Seattle. His offense is just kind of meh, but I just don't know what you do with the lineup right now. If he isn't at the top of it, yeah, I don't know who you move there.
Five lefties in a row or whatever. I mean,
but he doesn't even hit lefties. Like I know conventionally right, he's right. There to break up the lefties. His OPS against lefties is like 620 right now. I mean, his OPS for the season is 671. He's only 5 points ahead of Justin Crawford, by the way. So I just, dude, I don't know what you do with him. And, so you know, I don't want to be.
He's making 30 negative. Times the money that Justin Crawford is making, or more probably, like 30-something.
I mean, even Edmundo Sosa, who I thought was absolutely terrible until the last week, his OPS is up to 641.
He's been much better.
He's been much better. He had an unbelievable series against St. Louis.
He also, I trust him in a moment. Like, I feel like Edmundo gets big hits. That's anecdotal, but it just feels that way.
Yeah, I do think there's something to being clutch. And yeah. There's something.
I definitely think there is something to being clutch. Like, some guys' hearts beat slower. Like, some guys just breathe slower. Like some guys are just,
and some guys genuinely do get big hits. Like some guys do get hits with runners in scoring position. Some guys do come up in big moments, and Trey Turner just doesn't. Like he has had a couple moments with the Phillies, but at this point I worry that you're going into a postseason where you have an automatic out at the top of your lineup, and it's really going to let teams kind of figure their way out around Schwarber, Harper, and not really put the pressure on opposing teams the way those two guys should.
So as you were talking there, I'm honestly going through my head. I'm really truly thinking. I'm trying to see how far down the lineup I get where I would want Trey Turner up in a big spot over another Philly. And I'm pretty sure Garrett Stubbs is the only player on the Phillies that I would rather not be up than Trey Turner in a big spot. Like, I would rather have Derek Hill up in a big spot than Trey Turner. I would rather have Brian De La Cruz up in a big spot than Trey Turner. Anyone who starts, I would rather have up in a big spot than Trey Turner. How crazy is that? I just said on a freaking Phillies pod that I'd rather have Brian De La Cruz and Derek Hill. And in this moment, sure, I think a lot of people are nodding and agreeing with me. Think about before the freaking season. Neither of those guys on the team. They caused nothing to come here. Trey Turner's making $300 million to be here. Like, how great, Tucker, how crazy is that? Just in and of itself, in a vacuum, forgetting context, forgetting what we've seen right now, that on August 27th of the year 2026, I am sitting here on a podcast saying to you that Derek Hill and Brian De La Cruz are more trustworthy in a big spot with the bat than Trey Turner. Like, imagine if I had said that to you 4 years ago or whatever. Like, it's just such an insane thing to say. And I bet you agree with me.
Yeah, I mean, I just, like, he obviously hit the home run to go ahead against the Braves in game four of the 23 NLDS. Like, I won't take that away from him. That was a huge moment. He had that huge World Baseball Classic before he signed here. Like, he's had big moments. You could argue the World Baseball Classic in 2023 was the high point of Trey Turner's time with the Phillies.
Yeah, you really could. Yeah, we were so excited. Oh my God, the city was buzzing.
I remember texting my wife, like, we have the best player in baseball. It's unbelievable. Can you believe we got him for the next 11 years?
I tweeted something like, Philadelphia, you are going to freaking love this guy.
But it's funny because I just, as you were talking, I looked up his leverage stats on Baseball Reference. So in high leverage situations this year, sitting 159 with an OPS of 472.
There you go.
One home run, 10 RBIs. Like,
that
he just
jives with what I would.
It jives, right? Like, sometimes it happens and then you look and like, okay, like his numbers are pretty much the same, but not in those situations. Like, two out runner scoring position, he's hitting 180 this year. Men on base, he's hitting 214. Like, he just doesn't hit in big situations, and it's gonna come back to bite them. I think, like, I think this offense is good enough, and they have enough
baseball
guys around
the
lineup.
Are gonna find him, Tucker. The spots are gonna find him. That's the way baseball works. Like, Trey Turner's gonna come up with big spots.
There's gonna be a situation where, Crawford gets a single, maybe they walk Schwarber, and then Turner comes up with two guys on and can't get it done. Right, like, it's gonna come down to that. And as we said, like, this team might have to score a lot of runs to win in the postseason, and you can't be giving away at-bats from guys at the top of your lineup.
Yeah.
The unfortunate thing is I don't know who fills that spot.
Oh, well, that's a problem, especially if they're – and again, I agree with everyone who says the righty-lefty thing is overblown. I do think, I think it is – I don't think it's as big a deal as, like, certainly Rob Thomson made a team and all that, but I do think – then when we're talking about the playoffs, and we're talking about real good lefty relievers, the Tanner Scotts of the world, whoever you want to talk about, these guys who are, like, big and throw hard from the left side. Like, I do think that is a tough thing for guys like Schwarber and Harper. Like, they're just tough at bats for those guys. So we've seen it. We joked about Holby Milner being in the pot. Like, Holby Milner's not tough for everyone. He's tough for guys like that. And these guys are on these teams. Like, I'm generally, and at a certain point, like, I'd rather have Brandon Marsh up against a left-hander than Trey Turner up, So it's like, okay, I'll just take my shot or whatever. But, Brandon Marsh, obviously not the perfect example, but I'm using it to try and go far down the line, but for a lefty-lefty thing. We'll see, but I'm with you. At a certain point, you just have to say, look, I don't care that he's put JT up there or whatever. As much as I think JT stinks offensively, at least I trust JT in a spot, put the ball into right field if he has to, or to do this or whatever. Like, I mean, again, I don't feel good about JT. I'm just trying to make the point of, like, how bad I feel about Turner,
Yeah. One positive, though, Bryce Harper's just, like, red hot again. Like, dude, we won't talk about it. No one saw it because it was obviously on the West Coast, but, like, his batting average has jumped, like, 20 points in the last, like, 2 weeks.
He's got, like, a 500
multiple hits in the last four games. He's been unbelievable.
Yeah,
he didn't have the same kind of power, but the fact that he's been walking so much, the fact that his on base percentage now leads all of baseball in walks right now. I mean, crazy how hot he's been. Like Gergiulio said on the midday show today, like, if you had to pick a Phillies MVP right now, would probably pick Harper over Schwarber.
Oh, I think you would. It's close, but just because of the lulls that Schwarber's had. Listen to this. I was just throwing it out there. Bryce Harper in 24 games in August has a 509 on base percentage in August. 509. He has gotten on base in 24 games. He's 24 straight games. He has gotten on base over half the freaking time. Yeah, and he's slugging 600, 1109. Like, yeah, dude. Like, this is one of the great months of Bryce Harper's Phillies career, honestly. And it has not been talked about like that in any way, shape. So you're right.
No, it's been kind of quiet, I think, because he hasn't had a lot of huge moments. Like, he doesn't have it. I think he only has like 11 or 12 RBIs. He only has 5 home runs. So, like, the flashy highlight plays haven't necessarily been there. But, like, he's been on base a ton. He's scoring a ton of runs. This is the guy you want to talk about. Is Bryce Harper elite? What he's done this month has proved it. And, oh, by the way, he did move back to the outfield, at least on a part-time basis.
He made a really great catch yesterday, too. Yeah. So, yeah, with you, dude. I think it's a great point. Look, and he tied his homer total from last year already with a month ago. I don't love that. Like, I don't want him to play 162 games, but I appreciate that he wants to and might. I get that same thing with Schwarber last year. Like, I appreciate someone who wants to show up for work every day. Like, cool. Again, I don't know that it's the smartest thing, like, take a break, buddy, but he's crushing right now. So what am I to say? But yeah, I think after the elite thing and all that, it's been a really, really, really nice year for Bryce Harper. I totally agree. All right. You got anything else before we get out of here, Tuck?
Nope. That's it.
Look at that. Beautiful. No minor league.
Oh, you know what? I did. Yesterday I stopped the Little League World Series on my way home.
Ooh, look at you.
Wore a High Hope shirt. Got a nice shirt as I was walking around the stadium. So
whoever you were who said that to Tucker.
Whoever you were in the mountains of Williamsport.
Just know I love you. That's really all I want you to know. Know that I love you. And then Jack's not here, but he loves you too. And Tucker obviously loves you. So thank you.
It's a beautiful
nice
thing. I am, in fact, wearing one.
That's the shirt I wore. Yeah. If I hadn't worn it yesterday, I would have worn it today.
Love it.
All right. We will be back after the weekend or sooner. Something happens, but otherwise we'll be back after. Angels 2-3. I feel like we could feel good about 2-3. I need them to win 2-3 here.
Oh, yeah. No, you need to take care of business.
Got to take care of business against the Angels. We're fighting in a huge series against Diamondbacks. All right. Until then, he's Tucker. I'm Seltzer.